Angels in America, Tony Kushner's Tony Award-winning play about homosexuality and the AIDS epidemic, toured the country in the 1990s. In most places, it was met with praise, but in others, it became incredibly controversial. It sparked protests, and in one city, even resulted in the defunding of the entire arts program.
It raises this question. We tend to think that offensive art is offensive because of the art, but it turns out that art is only offensive in some places.
So what's the difference between those places? Stephen Tepper tackles that question in his book, Not Here, Not Now, Not That. He's the dean of the Herberger Institute for Design and the Arts at Arizona State University. And in that book, he analyzes 71 cities and how they tackled debates over everything from memorials and public art to books and parades. He's giving a lecture about the topic at the ASU Art Museum tonight at 6 o'clock. And I sat down with him recently to talk more about it. We started with that example of Angels in America. In Charlotte, North Carolina, the nudity in the show became a point of contention, and a number of city council members really came out strongly against it. Here's Tepper with more.
The theater company in Charlotte persisted. They performed it. There were attempts to shut it down by law enforcement, but those were stopped by the court. It went forward. Mm-hmm. But the threat was, if you do this, we are going to defund the entire Arts and Science Council of the city of Charlotte, Mecklenburg County. Which they did. But what's amazing is that, one, there's a lot of comment in the newspaper and in public spaces that people were, even if they didn't come, it didn't come out on the side that they wanted, they were glad that they went through that process, that the city of Charlotte debated something that was really important to them, and that even though there were moments of incivility, when people sort of took advantage of the situation to kind of inflame passions, overall, people felt like it was a good democratic process. And if you think about it, it doesn't feel like a good democratic process when the Arts and Sciences Commission got defunded. But what happened was that the corporations of Charlotte, who were part of the vision of a progressive Charlotte, put together an advocacy group, built a campaign. Each of those council members that voted to defund got defeated. A new council was created with new representation who supported the arts. The business community rallied around it, and the council was refunded at a much higher level.
Let's talk a little bit about what goes into that then. Like you said, it's not always about the art,
right?
But this, it seems to have turned into a political issue. Is it always sort of taking political sides or taking an issue that is politically expedient to somebody and making that the focus?
So when you actually collect lots of data, so what I did in my book is I collected every example of public controversy in every city in America and tried to figure out which cities fight more than others and what are the patterns. When you do that, you can start seeing patterns, you know, that show up when you run the statistics, when you run the numbers. But there's always going to be people who are trying to take advantage for political gain, who are inflaming passions. And that happens, but that is not the dominant predictor of controversy. It's really what's happening in the community. And what we find is that the greatest predictor of conflict for a city is the extent to which they're experiencing social change, demographic change, immigration, population changes. Those changes create a kind of a disruption that puts everyone wondering, what's the future of the city? What's the future of my values? Whose values and voice matters in this community? And then these symbols become a great way to play out those debates. Mm-hmm. But the other thing we find is when these birds of prey, these political actors, when they get involved, the conversation tends to be less civil. Mm-hmm. So if no national sort of predator, someone who's really trying to take advantage of the controversy gets involved, the community figures out how to work through it.
What I wonder then, if it's not necessarily, it's not the obvious correlation that you would guess. Is this, do you think, then, about identity, about insecurity with identity? And that seems to be something that's pretty prevalent in this country right now.
It is exactly about that. It is all about identity. And when you think about how do we come to know who we are, how do we come to perceive others, it's really about the symbols and the stories that we exchange that get projected in advertisements, in our museums, in our music, in our films and TV. You know, those are the stories that are reflecting something about who we are, our identity. And so it's both about collective identity, right? Because if there's this thing in your community that you don't think belongs in it, it makes you wonder, well, is this my community? How can other people be okay with it if I find it so offensive? And it's also about your own identity, how you assert who you are. And if you think about a world where increasingly it seems like we have to defer to experts because things are so complicated and everything's driven by data and statistics, everybody can have an opinion about art. There are experts. We train them at the Herberger Institute for Design and the Arts. But it's incumbent on us not to take the expert position when people protest, to say, no, you're wrong because you don't know.
Right.
Because everybody has an experience that's valuable. Everybody has an identity that they're trying to articulate. And these symbols are shared, and we don't always agree on what the symbols should be. And so that is a very natural process.
Yeah.
And we should celebrate it instead of trying to run away from it or penalize for it or, try to be so cautious in what we present to the world that if we're a museum, for example, that we won't put anything out that people are willing to fight over. What I always say is when you know that art matters, it's because people are willing to fight over it.
Right. So that's my next question then. From the art world perspective, which you're part of, does this then sort of contribute to the art? Is this sort of the purpose of some of this?
Well, I don't think we have got to be intentionally just trying to be provocative to generate audience and media attention.
Right,
I think that's not a good strategy as a curator. But just by doing work that is addressing serious issues of identity and the issues of our time, it's going to cause controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, the art world has done a really bad job because we have tried to silence our critics. We've either said, art has to be free. And so, artists do what they do and you can't, tell them not to.
Right.
That's kind of silencing. That's not a conversation. That's just saying, okay, well, your opinion doesn't matter because an artist gets to do whatever they want to. Or we say, we are professionals and so we know what we're doing. Just trust us. This is great art, even if you don't like it or even if it offends you. That's also a silencing tactic. And then the third thing we do is we immediately talk about First Amendment. And again, those are all silencing tactics. And I think in this day and age, we as arts leaders have to really listen to our community. I mean, there was an example, the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis just this past year. An artist put a piece in the public square. I think it was called Scaffold. And it was essentially instruments of, I think, lynching that was to call attention to our history of violence against our own people, including our indigenous communities. The artist's intention was to raise this as, oh, how terrible it is that we've done this in our history. We must not forget. But for the indigenous community, it was re-traumatizing them. And the artist and the museum did not check in with the indigenous community before they put that piece out.
Right.
Lots of controversy. But then the artist gave the piece of artwork to the indigenous community, signed over their rights, and the indigenous community ceremoniously buried it as part of the process. Now that's, in my mind, a beautiful sequence of things. I'm sorry that it happened and that the indigenous community was traumatized, but the museum learned a lot about having to engage and listen and come down from a place of expertise and recognize that knowledge exists everywhere and they have to be more inclusive in how they think about their programs and their projects. And so I think the art world is beginning much more to come out of their special places and recognize that they don't have all the answers and that part of the artistic process is listening to the community. So there's really no reason why we can't deal with controversy in a way that's truly inclusive and open and not hierarchical, not about our power as experts, and give people, it's about voice. And the beauty is that arts conflict produces voice, and we're living in a day and age where we can receive more voice than we've ever received before because we can technologically enable it and make it possible.
All right. Stephen J. Tepper is the dean of the Herberger Institute for Design and the Arts at Arizona State University. Stephen, thank you so much for coming in.
It's great to be here.